On this episode of Healing From Within with Tony Valen, author and animal chaplain Sarah A. Bowen is here to offer advice for surviving animal loss, making life meaningful, and healing the planet. Next on Healing From Within with Tony Valen.
Healing From Within with your host, Tony Valen.
So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with you, Tony.
I have so many questions, and we read over your book and did a little research on you. And very interesting, you're the first person on the show that is an animal chaplain. Can you tell us what that entails and how you became an animal chaplain?
I sure can. So I like to say that, you know, I support anyone regardless of their belief system or their species. That is the short version. But if we think about what chaplains do, you know, chaplains, we find chaplains in hospitals and in universities and in the military. We even find them in NASCAR and in corporations now. And chaplains really help people deal with life's joys and challenges. From, you know, a place of meeting people where they are rather than a specific theological viewpoint. So an animal chaplain does that in relation to non-human species. So cats and dogs and squirrels and fish and, you know, you name it, right? Humans are 0.01% of life on this planet. So we deal with the other 99.99%. But we also support humans, too. There's a lot of messy questions that come up around, you know, what happens when you find when you get a diagnosis for a cat you live with that you don't quite care, you know, you don't really like the diagnosis of? What happens if you have a dog who's died and you're not sure what to do? So, you know, animal chaplains get involved in all of those messy things supporting people and the animals that they love.
I see. Perfect.
Oh, and how did I become one? I guess yes. Was the second part of your question. You know, I'm a preacher's kid. And, you know, my father was someone who I really looked up to. And I spent a lot of time in funeral homes and churches and hospitals and things with him. But I started to notice, too, that some of the beings I was concerned about, little chipmunks and squirrels and cats, weren't always taken care of in church. And so as my life proceeded and my concern for them progressed, I found myself in seminary doing a lot of study on both religion and spirituality and on animals, behavior, cognition, emotions, all of that. And that came together for me in becoming an animal chaplain.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you for answering that.
Sure.
And it seems like in the mainstream, it seems like we know and acknowledge loss of life when it's human, but when it's our little pets, animals, we just don't have the right way of dealing with that loss. As a matter of fact, I mean, people I know, and I'll let you know, I'm originally from Texas, and when I had pets back in Texas and growing up, they weren't necessarily pets. They were, you know, like they had a job and they had a function to do. And they were part of the family, but not like now. I mean, today I'm so in touch with my little pets, and I just love them so much. And now I see them in a different way. So how can we deal with the loss of a pet and, you know, and not feel judged by others that don't understand?
That's such a good question, Tony. And what you talked to, you know, in the history there that brief history you mentioned too of animals in Texas is something interesting because that is what happened. You know, we had relationships with animals as humans that were really natural. You know, if we go back thousands of years, we lived amongst animals. And then when we started agriculture and herding and different things, we started different relationships with animals. And then, you know, at a certain point, we started taking some of those working animals that we had put to work, and we had some favorites. We started calling them pets and allowing them to be inside, and their lives changed a lot, you know, when when we started treating them differently and our relationships did. So, you know, how we are moved by their death and what happens to them makes a lot of sense, because they have become part of our families. There's an interesting statistic that says that 70% of homes now in the U.S. include an animal other than human. 70%. So most of us, the majority, let's just say the majority of us are living with animals. And that when we lose them, one study said that 98% of people had problems with that loss that dealt with daily functioning, right? So people who don't want to go out, or you're sad, or you have a hard time concentrating at work. And like you said, you know, you're not really sure you can tell people, you know, I'm really grieving a dog or a cat or someone else, some other being, because it's not viewed as the same. So I think the easy answer to your question, or perhaps not so easy, is that we need to talk more about it. We need to talk more about the loss that we have, and perhaps be able to understand that not everyone's going to get it, but more and more people are, and we need to normalize it. So when we talk about it, we stand firm in remembering our love for a being and focus on that rather than someone else may not get it. I think that's the first place to stay grounded. In the book, Sacred Send-Offs, I do offer also, you know, some tips, kind of a three-point plan for folks to go through if you've recently had a loss, or you know, think you might be about to have a loss. And we get really, really deep into, you know, what are some of the tactics that you can do to recover your life after loss, as well as some interesting questions about what to do with animal bodies. You know, we don't like to talk about that either. Is that something you've ever considered? Like, what happens to an animal's body when they die?
I have not, but I live such a different way of thinking of our little pets, because I've had pets for 20 plus years. And when we lost one of our little cats, which was a little cat, but it was the runt of the family. So even full size, it was the size of a kitten. And when we lost her, we were just devastated. And we actually had our little burial for her, and we did bury her in our yard in the back. So, but I don't know if anyone else would do that, you know.
You know, some people do. A lot of people do bury animals in their backyard. A lot of people also, if they don't have access to a backyard, or let's say you live in a city in a fifth floor walk-up and you can't go digging around somewhere, cremation's also popular. But there's kind of a new process out too called aquamation, because cremation has some really tough effects on the environment. It's not real good. It uses a lot of energy and it's not real good for the environment. So aquamation too. So there's some of these things, you know, when we start to talk about it and start to think about the decisions we make about what happens to an animal's body and whether we might have a funeral, or I like to call them, Tony, furry wakes. So invite some friends over, have some stories about the animal, share about their life, what they meant to you, what they touched in your heart, and share that. Or for children, I often recommend, you know, could we have back in the area where we might bury an animal, a little flower garden with a little bench that a child could go to when they miss Fido or Fluffy, and they could just sit there and, you know, talk to them or share what their emotions are. So if we get creative about this, there's a lot of different things that we can do to say, you know, their death mattered. It, you know, their relationship with us mattered. And so, you know, some of the things that we do for human animals, because we are animals too, we might extend to dogs and cats and birds and squirrels and other beings.
Right. And, you know, the way that I'm making sure that my friends and people around me will understand and know the importance of my pet, or I don't even like to call them pets. I like to call them my fur babies. How important.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. The way I make the importance of their is I don't want to wait till the last minute and talk about their death and what they meant to me. Almost every day, I text out and I post pictures of my cats and what they're doing and their little attitudes and their little lives and the way they communicate with me. And whenever, you know, I'm with dinner with friends and stuff, I will share all the cat pictures, and that prompts them to open up and share their pictures of their cats and their dogs. And I feel that in my own little way, I'm letting them know, hey, listen, they're important. They mean something, and they feel and they love us just as much as we love them. You know,
that is a beautiful practice. And, you know, I like to say, you know, dogs rule the dog parts and cats rule the internet. I mean, they really, really do. And I think something that we noticed during the pandemic was that, you know, their animals became more visible in a lot of ways, at least in the U.S. where I live. Because a lot of people started to work from home. Not everyone was able to do that. And there's some socioeconomic reasons for that and structural reasons, but there were a lot of people who worked from home. And so we started seeing dogs and a lot of cattails walking across keyboards during Zoom meetings. And we started to see them more. And I think that that's a real plus for what you're talking about being able to share. And I've been on plenty of call where someone's dog barks and they say, I'm so, so sorry. And I say, please don't apologize. What do you think they have to say? and maybe do you need to go let someone out? Maybe they need the bathroom, or, you know, what do you do? So I think that's a beautiful practice, Tony, that you're doing.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, that when people are on camera and their little pets, you know, or little fur babies come up and want to do something. I have one that I'm surprised she's not at the door meowing, because whenever I close the door to do this and she sees the lights or whatever, she always meows to the point where I think I've had to put on some filters to make sure that it doesn't pick it up, because she just loves to come alive when the camera is on and the lights are on.
Yeah. I think, you know, and I think that says something. You know, if we go back 200 years, there was a belief that, you know, animals were automata. Animals were, you know, they were worked on instinct. They didn't have feelings and thoughts and beliefs or emotions or empathy, all of these things. And in the last, you know, 150 years, we have just smashed down every single one of those with plenty of personal experience and collective experience and scientific evidence as well, that there's a lot going on for animals. And so, you know, being able to not treat the animal companions in our homes as, hey, we're just interested in you when we want love, but to be, you know, to really tune into what are their needs, to learn about them. That's one of the other things I try to do as an animal chaplain is, you know, how much do you know about the species you're living with? And often we don't know a whole lot. Like, yeah. Why do cats love cardboard? You know,
exactly.
Right. So, you know, getting really curious and learning about the folks that we live with is also helpful too.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned that there's three steps to dealing with grief and loss of our little loved ones. Can you briefly go through those steps for us? Because I'm very interested in letting people know about that.
Absolutely. So, you know, the first thing that we really want to do is to accept the reality of the loss. Now, that's hard sometimes, right? So one of the reasons that we often don't want to talk about losing an animal companion is we fear that we're going to be overwhelmed. So we can prepare ahead of time. That's the first thing, is prepare ahead of time, have some words ready, have some items ready that might be useful, and think about it before it happens. But after it happens, it's accept the reality of the loss. So that means we need to talk with others about it. We need to talk about how we're feeling. And we also need to address any unhelpful self-talk. And there's a exercise for that in the book too. You know, we have a lot of I should have, I should not, all of these kind of things we need to work through, you know, really seeing where we're limiting ourselves. And then the second thing is we have to process the pain of grief and adjust to life after loss. So here's what that looks like really practically. Okay, I had someone I was working with who said, I can't go down the stairs anymore because my dog used to wait at the bottom of the stairs for me every morning. And now when I come out of my bedroom, I can't. I can't, you know, I can't come down the stairs. I can't leave my bedroom. And I said, all right, well, what if we had a beautiful photo of your dog and you put that down on the bottom stair? And what about every morning when you came down, you could sit on that bottom stair for a moment, hold the photo, have a few words to the animal that you lost. You know, I believe we can have connections. So, you know, see if you can have any of those connections and sit there and give yourself a moment to adjust to. There's not a bouncy dog at the bottom of the stairs, but there is a beautiful memory of your relationship with a bouncy dog.
Right.
Right. Or there may be, we might be used to driving to a certain dog park and may have to readjust our route. We also may need to help the other people in our family adjust to that by doing things differently. So how can we keep the memory of that animal alive and also adjust to life? And then the third thing is to find enduring connections. So stop saying, I need closure. Stop saying, I need to get past the pain. I need to stop feeling it. I need to, you know, any of that, and say, all right, I have a lot of love for a being. That being is not here on this earthly plane in their bouncy body anymore. Where am I going to put that love? And so for some people, they believe that they can have a connection in the, what I call the what's next, into the what's next. And many people can. And for other people, what they need to do is have an enduring connection with their memories. So those are really the three things that help us. And so, you know, understanding that it's going to take some time and, you know, trying to get to a point of closure is not the goal, but trying to integrate the loss into our life is the goal. Does that sound like that's helpful, Tony?
Yes. Yes, it does. And you know, and as you're talking about this, all these questions come to my mind, because on this show, I talk to a lot of metaphysical people. I deal with psychics and mediums and whatever. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions along those lines. Do you think that pets choose us when they come into our lives the way babies do, you know? And
That's a great question. And no one's asked me that before. I'm gonna hold the possibility that that's true. That's how I would answer that. I've had a number of experiences where I feel like I have been chosen by an animal, and I do think that the idea of soul contracts, or the ideas of working through different things, and I will share, because your audience may appreciate this. I had a little orange ginger cat that I loved so, so very much, who showed up in our backyard one day crying, had been left by its mother, his mother, and eventually became part of our household, but was always an outdoor cat who ran after squirrels and slept in trees. And he was just a nutter. I mean, he was just a ball of joy. This beautiful, beautiful, beautiful little orange cat. And then one day we found him in our backyard. He was about a year and a half old, paralyzed from the waist down. And still from the waist up, super happy, still purring, still Max. From the waist down, nothing happening. And so, you know, we made the difficult decision at that time. I know a little more now about some of the options I might have tried, but at the time that was the best that the vet had for us, was that, you know, euthanasia would be appropriate. And so about 2 months after Max passed on, a bright orange squirrel showed up outside my window. Different color than the squirrels usually are in my yard. And I looked at the little squirrel and I said, are you Max? Like, you really look like Max. You know, and he looked at me and kind of did a ch-ch-ch-ch-ch like the squirrels do, you know, just kind of like, I don't know, lady, I'm not going to tell you if I am, you know, that's how it felt. And then just kind of took off. And then I ended up cultivating this beautiful relationship with this squirrel and having some interesting conversations with this squirrel. And it was part of my processing of Max, but you know, I don't know. I don't know if part of Max ended up in that squirrel, or, you know, what that connection was. I don't have the facts, quote unquote, to tell you about that experience, but I do have the experience that I can share, that I don't know that that animals always come back, and my Hindu friends would and Buddhist friends would probably agree with me on this, as the same species. So it's quite possible that I have a squirrel in my yard who used to be a cat, for what it's worth.
Well, and you know, the thing about it is that the way I feel about pets, and this is just the world according to me, I feel like when we treat our pets like family, and not just in the sense of, you know, calling them our family, but with the love, the respect, and the compassion, that when they do pass over, we elevate them to the next level. So I feel like they come back as a human. I don't know if that's true or not, but I definitely feel that.
I'm gonna hold the possibility that that's true as well. That's beautiful, Tony.
Yeah. So I think you touched on something that you talked about, because I was going to ask you to talk about chapter 3, the inconsistent truth. Because I found that interesting. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, well, you know, when you start getting involved with certain animals and loving certain animals, you start to notice that not all animals are treated the same way, and that we have really different beliefs, and they differ by culture, of, you know, what role animals play and what roles different species play. And that has led to some animals being treated really horribly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that I try to do as an animal chaplain is to ask a lot of really curious questions about, you know, can we improve lives not only for the animals we live with, but beyond that, and keep going out in circles, right? We have something called a moral circle of compassion, right? That's why that's why I love people in my family more perhaps than I like the neighbors across the street, perhaps than I like the people down the street. You know, like we have this kind of in-group, out-group. We like to believe that we love everyone the same. We like to believe that, but when it comes down to practical actions, we aren't always consistent. So in that chapter, I'm really trying to look at some of the things that are happening with wildlife or in our oceans or in captive animals or different things in different habitats, and see if we can get involved in bringing love and compassion there too.
Right. Yeah, and actually that's where I was going next. Before we started this interview, you had mentioned that you want to talk about not just our little pets at home, but other animals in other environments. Can you talk about that with
sure.
us?
Sure. You know, one of the things, here's a really interesting statistic that I like to talk to people about. Now think for a second of the experience of driving. We've all had this, and you're driving down the road and you see an animal who's been hit and is on the side of the road. And how do we react, and how do we respond, and what do we do? What do we do about that? And so, you know, I started doing a practice. Actually, I stole it from my husband, because we were driving along one day and he smacked his hand over his chest. And I thought, you know, is he having a heart attack? What's going on here? Like, what's going on? And he said, well, you know, I'm giving a blessing for that animal who just lost their life. And I was like, God, it's beautiful. And of course I married him shortly after I married him. I thought my soulmate, but I started doing that practice, and I started talking to people about what happens if we acknowledge that loss. And if we acknowledge the heartbreak that we feel seeing, you know, a once living being is now on the side of the road. And when I started doing a little research on that, I learned this fact. This is just mind boggling. About 100 humans die on the roads in the U.S. every year. And that's sad, and it's heartbreaking. It's horrific. And 1 million animals die a day on our roads. 400 million a year. It's mind-boggling. So, you know, if we're people who live by spiritual principles or religious principles or ethics or morals or whatever drives us to compassion, you know, might we want to not text while we drive? Might we want to drive a little slower so that we have time if a raccoon enters the roadway? Might we want to pull over and throw our hazards on if we see a turtle crossing the road and help them get across? Always in the same direction they're going, folks. Always in the same direction. But, you know, when we can start to learn about the beings that live around us, we can be more helpful and perhaps stop some of the unhelpfulness that humans are. So that's wildlife. I also talk in the book about captive animals, animals who are in labs, animals who are in factory farms. You know, what should be our response to that? And what do we do about that too?
Well, you know, and I was going to ask you to read from the book one of the main points or what you want to, one of your favorite parts of the book, I guess, because I love authors to read from their books so that people can understand, you know, the book in general. Would you mind?
Yeah, I would be happy to. And I will let folks know if they're interested in reading Sacred Send-Offs that I have a mixture of, I like to say, sweetness and snarkiness. So, you know, I try to have some laughter and some humor and some joy while we're talking about difficult topics and yeah. Raise some kind of funny stories and interesting kind of foibles I've had along the way within the book. So there's some very amusing, self-deprecating kind of stories there, poking fun at myself and some of my relationships to animals. But I also include some practices, some reflection questions, some meditations we can do. And I include a kind of a set of prayerful words that I love, that I'd love to read to you all. So absolutely. What I would say is, as we're receiving them, to just take a deep breath for a second and close your eyes and think about your relationship with the animals around you or your spiritual connections with the animals you may have lost. And think about these words. May my presence be a blessing to all creatures. Blessed furriness walking on four legs, may you be sustained and flourish. Blessed feathered of the skies, may you be sustained and flourish. Blessed finned beings of the waters, may you be sustained and flourish. And blessed leafy ones, rooted deep down in the earth, may you be sustained and flourish. Glory be to the forests, and to the deserts, and to the holy seas, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. And may I live in connection to that everlasting cycle of life. And when this body can no longer sustain me, may I too be blessed with a sacred send-off. Another deep breath. And just notice how those words sink in. All right, Tony, that's what I got for you on the reading.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sarah. And I wanted to thank you for being on the show and telling us about the book, Sacred Send-Offs, Sarah A. Bowman. And you can go to her website for that. And I believe that the website... the website that I picked up on was spiritual-rebel.com. Is that correct?
That's actually the one. They must have given you the one for the last book, but go check that out, folks.
Oh.
For this book, Spiritual Rebel was the last book, but sacredsendoffs.com is the best place that you can go to get information on the book. There's meditations there for you all to try out. There's a DIY loss kit in case you've lost an animal and want to try some activities. There's all sorts of stuff there. So sacredsendoffs.com. And you can also get the book at anywhere you buy books. You know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookshop is always a very, very good place to start.
I agree. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tony.